the shepherd's song. The herald summons, your king returns. What's written on the pages echo through the ages. Shema Yisrael, you must hear Yahuwah's word so clear. In this night and in the day, echoes never fade away. David's songs forever sing. Mashiach's gift to you we bring. Lift the shofar to the sky. Yahuwah is El Shaddai. Shema Yisrael, hear the sound. A message for you coming down. Daughters of Zion, lift your voice. The time has come to make your choice. Shema Yisrael, you must hear Yahuwah's word so clear. In this night and in the day, echoes never fade away.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yah Radio here with Kirk this evening. And I want to give everybody just an update as to where we are at this point. The most interesting volume so far, and I think the whole of the 35 that are part of the Yada Yah series, is the one we're sharing information from now. We're in some of the latter chapters of Volume 5, which was a comprehensive rewrite. It was right around 400 pages previously. It's 820-some-odd pages, 830 pages currently. My current involvement with it is that the editing team has sent me the entire book to enter their suggested edits. I think I'm just past page 600 of it.
Wow.
And probably we'll get the rest of it in over the next couple of days. And so when it's ready to go, it'll be presented on the yadayah.com site in its rightful position at twice or more than twice the original size. And I think you'll find it to be worth the read. It is a completely rewritten and up-to-date presentation of the harvest, which should comprise both Shabuah and Teruah. And since those are both future events, it's interesting reading because it tells you where we are headed. At the same time, I am trying to complete the book called Coming Home 3. I had written about, 200 some odd pages, maybe 300 pages. It's been posted as a book in progress. I ended up rewriting all of that really from the beginning. And now I'm about 300 some pages into it, this rewrite of it, and have decided to venture off into Mizmor 110 through 116 at my lovely wife's urging. So that's what I'm currently exploring there. I think another maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And we will finish Coming Home 3. I had shared that I was going to move from being a full-time translator and writer, commentator, to a full-time video blogger. I'm not sure if I'll go that extreme. I still just enjoy both translating and writing. It's how we learn. It's how we grow. It's how we keep our conversation so vital with Yahuwah. So I'll probably venture on after Coming Home 3, either into a Yada Yahuwah Volume 9 or Coming Home 4. It's just that the writing won't be the biggest priority. It'll be sort of in the background. But that will leave us with some 35 or 36 books on the shelf at yadayah.com, which is really such a beautiful and functional website. Mm-hmm. Of course, the video blogcasting will be the primary way that we're going to reach out to people to encourage them to come visit the website. Still, we are in a position that to know Yahweh, to appreciate what he is offering us and to understand what he's asking in return requires considerable investment of time and learning, and that is best done by reading the books. So the purpose of the blogcast, both of news and of anti-religion, anti-politics in my review of the news, as well as Yahweh's Torah and prophets, all of it is going to point to Yahweh. One of the things that we are going to do that is going to be slightly different in this regard is that my intent over the next few weeks is to do a rebranding of both our social media and also our books, where the primary theme is no longer going to be Yada Yahweh. Yada Yahweh will be the signature series of the books. It's the longest series. We have several that are five volumes long, but Yada Yahweh is an eight-volume series starting in the beginning, and it's the one, of course, that presents both the covenant and the Mikra, as well as the order of events over time. And so it is our signature series, but the thought is that we will transition to presenting everything just under Yahweh's name. So the header on all of our books is going to be Yahweh, and then the Yada Yahweh series will be presented like all the other books as the series, and then the name and title of the volume within that series presented under it. Okay. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to change our logo from the lion to a very contemporary stylized menorah. The reason for that is that the lion represents Dode. And while we dearly love Dode, as does Yahweh, Yahweh's symbol isn't the lion. It's the menorah. Now, the reason we don't just go to his menorah, in fact, the one on the website is a very excellent rendition of it, one that was commissioned by Jackie and is animated on the homepage of our website. The reason we're not going to the traditional menorah as described in the Torah, is that this is an interpretation of Yahweh's message for our time. And it's these series of books and everything we do is about conveying Yahweh's message to his people at this time, also in the lingua franca of the world. And so Yahweh was actually quite explicit with me as we talked about where we are and where we are going, that he not only wanted the menorah to replace the lion, but he wants it to be a very contemporary, stylish interpretation of it, which is what we are currently pursuing. And you will see that replace the lion over the next few weeks. And you're going to see Yahweh as the header on all of our books without the Yada, with the exception of the Yada Yahweh series, which will be subordinate just to Yahweh's name. The other thing we're going to do is we're going to have what is essentially a new beginning across some of our media outreach, where the blogs will be video blogs, which is the way people prefer to receive information. There's an added credibility that comes being able to look at the person that is presenting this information to you. It is both more captivating and more personal because there is a visual image. So they'll be video blogs, but most of our video blogs are going to be presented under the Yahweh banner and this new menorah, but the content will be mostly new. And that's as it really should be because we have learned so much and grown so much over this short period of time. And we have tried so hard to make this, the audio from this show, more interesting, and it's that's a tough battle because most of the videos and presentations on YouTube are much more visually stimulating than what we can do with just the audio feed. The second part of it is that very seldom you'll see something that's longer than 15 or 20 minutes. And this show has been almost 2 hours for much of its existence. So it's been challenging with our content and the format that people prefer. So to do our best to draw attention to the books and reach out to both Goyim and Yisraelites, we're going to present the information in a much more appropriate manner that should generate much more attention in the short time that we have left. So that is our plan in that regard. I would say that probably a third of the shows are going to be news-oriented. I'm going to go back to what they did long, long time ago with Shattering Myths, which was the syndicated radio program where we did the first hour or so of the show on news items. I will probably pick one item in the news and do a 10-minute presentation on it, and then pick another and do another independent 10-minute presentation on it, so that we have lots of content and lots of unique things for people to see and to hear and to catch people's interest. So that is the current plan. Now, on a matter of news, since we mentioned that, the big news, of course, out of Israel is that the International Court in The Hague has decided that they want to arrest Benjamin Netanyahu and, of course, the former defense minister, Gantz, for war crimes. And, of course, the basis of this is so laughable. It's almost as if we have two demonic cults that are vying for who can be the most sadistic and irresponsible and dastardly. Of course, you have the death cult of Islam, and then you have this satanic milieu that is mislabeled the United Nations. It is so perverse that you would not condemn any of the Islamic cults for all of the terrorism they have perpetrated on the world, but you would condemn Israel for defending itself.
Isn't that amazing?
You would call the nations where the Jewish population has fallen over the last 70 years by 99%, which would be equivalent to the most extreme form of genocide. And you wouldn't condemn any of them for their genocidal tendencies towards Jews, even though it's proven. And the nation that actually warns civilians to move out of harm's way, that oversees 3,500 calories of food per person per day, that oversees vaccines for the people, that risks its own soldiers' lives to try to isolate the Islamic jihadists that would kill their people, and to try to recover the hostages who have decided that they would hide among their children. And so while Israel tries to protect them, the jihadists they're fighting against tries to use them as human shields. It is the most inane response ever to a situation. The International Court has taken the view that is the opposite of reality. They're condemning those that are defending themselves in the most moral possible way and not condemning, exonerating, actually trying to work on behalf of those who have behaved in the most disgusting manner possible. And let's be clear. There is no such thing as a civilian in an Islamic community, particularly one committed to the genocide of Jews. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. There's no such thing as a Palestinian state. And the Muslims there overwhelmingly want the annihilation of Jews and the destruction of Israel. And what's so amazing is that it's one thing for a religious death cult where God is Satan to be brainwashed into such horrendous and immoral attitudes and actions. But what is the excuse of the goddamn United Nations? What is the excuse of progressives? How are you completely clueless as to the history and the nature of Islam that you would side with people who have been so savage that they have nothing redeeming going for them just because of your anti-Semitism, and you do so almost in lockstep? It's clearly an abomination. It's hard to fathom. The only other item in the news that I just want to comment on, just because it is so bizarre, but the cabinet picks of Donald Trump. I mean, it's like he's trying to say, how far can I push this before people just bust out and start laughing? He's got this woman in Hawaii that I'm not sure has an experience doing anything, and she is going to be the national security. He picked the guy that I thought was the most bizarre in terms of his ideas on vaccines and healthcare and his conspiracy theories, Kennedy, and is proposing him for health and human welfare. I mean, what are you thinking? He picked two guys that are both accused of having written checks to keep women or girls quiet for inappropriate sexual encounters. One's already dropped out, accused of having sex with a minor. I mean, I got no issue with Huckabee's position on Israel, but why would you pick a Christian to be your ambassador to Israel? Yes. Rubio, you know, is an interesting fellow, but with all of the negative campaign rhetoric that you've leveled against him, you're going to make him Secretary of State? I'm just flabbergasted. I guess it's entertaining. But for the progressives and Democrats who are condemning his choices because they're saying, oh, they don't have any experience, well, think of the gaggle of goons that the Biden administration put together. I mean, starting with the vice president, who had nothing going for her. Everybody was chosen like the press secretary, based upon their skin color or their sexual orientation. I mean, everybody in that administration, he wanted to check boxes. He had certain number of women's, certain number of people with black skin, brown skin, plenty of homosexuals, lesbians, and of course even a transgender. I guess a man who wanted to be a woman. It was the most bizarre of all assemblages. So I guess we just don't have any reason to expect presidents to do what you would think would be responsible. Anyway, I continue to be concerned about this president because MBS in Saudi Arabia, who is a psychopath. Now, that's different than Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a narcissist. He most certainly is not a psychopath. But MBS in Saudi Arabia, the crown prince, he is a psychopath. He would kill and giggle in the process. He thinks nothing of inflicting pain on others. He was not long ago in a position where he was considering normalization with Israel. But then he decided against it in his very seldom played speech, where he made it quite clear that if he normalized relations with Israel, he was a dead man walking, that the fundamentalist Muslims would kill him.
Yeah.
And he knew it. And he's got what he thinks is a good gig, and all the wealth that one could possibly imagine oozing up out of that sand. And so he is not about to do that unless he gets his pound of flesh so he can say, look what I extracted from them. I've made them ripe for destruction. He has also doubled down on the Muslim and progressive myth of Jews perpetrating genocide when there isn't even 1% of the civilian, if you want to pretend there are such things, population of Gaza, who have been killed. And genocide is just the opposite of that. It's what the Muslim countries have done to Jews, is genocide. And so he, at his most recent conference, accused Israel of genocide in Gaza and then condemned Israel for allowing Jews to go onto the Temple Mount. Those are not the kinds of approaches that lead to normalization of relationships. They are insane. They're the comments of a psychopath. And then he is further cozying up to Iran, preferring to be close to Iran than he would be to Israel. So the amount that you would have to give Saudi Arabia would be overwhelming. It will be like Great Britain giving Adolf Hitler and the Nazis Czechoslovakia, which wasn't theirs to give. But when they gave it, it started the next world war. And that is what we're up against. And Trump's ego is sufficient that he would engage in something like this just for the acclaim. And of course, he doesn't have any significant empathy for anyone else. So the destruction of Israel wouldn't mean anything to him. It's all about a claim for him. And unfortunately, you know, for fortunate reasons, but he did some good things for Israel, the Golan Heights and the move of the embassy to Jerusalem have caused Jews to trust him, which is going to put him in the position to be the one who sells them out.
Yeah.
So this is a serious problem, and it is our future, but we know the future of Israel. It is written, and it is assured. I do think, I guess there's one other item in the news that I should be mentioning, and that is that the Biden administration in its last 60 days did two things that pushed the world much closer to nuclear confrontation. One is they told the Ukrainians that they could deploy U.S. long-range missiles to attack Russia, deep inside of Russia. And the second is that they could deploy U.S. landmines. And it's irresponsible. First of all, the United States shouldn't be making and shouldn't be offering landmines. They're savage devices. And the United States should not be attacking Russia, even in a proxy war. For the United States, the second largest holder of nuclear weapons, to send weapons that are deployed against Russia, in effect, the United States now attacking Russia, at war with Russia, who is the largest holder of nuclear weapons, is so irresponsible, so risky. And that war never had to happen, never should have happened. All America had to do was keep its hands off of Ukraine, not position Ukraine to be part of NATO, not try to change Ukraine's need for cash because their economy is so rife with the graft, and so is their politics, that they require billions of international aid a year, which Russia was supplying, but the United States decided we want to supply it so they can be part of NATO and we control them. We went from Russia supplying the $2 billion they needed annually to them costing us $100 billion a year. And all we've done is kill people in the process in a proxy war because we want to fight against Russia with our weapons in Ukraine. It was and remains insane. All right, let's return to the most sane voice in the room. Yahweh inspired a prophet named Yeshayah. Yeshayah means that Yahweh saves. Yahweh delivers. He removes from harm's way. He liberates is what Yasha means, and it's Yeshayah, which is short for Yahweh. And this prophet is different than the others in that he had a principal agenda, which we're going to listen to as we move into the 61st chapter. Well, Yeshayah states that he was anointed for this agenda. Until several years ago, no one had ever considered that agenda. They read right through it. But the book from the beginning and to the end is principally devoted to this agenda. And yet it's never considered. It's an enigma as to why the greatest of the prophets is not taken for his word. And I've shared this with you in the past, but the purpose, the primary thrust of the prophet Yeshayah is to explain why the religiosity of Israel precluded them from listening to God, precluded them from being prophets on behalf of Yahweh, precluded them from being witnesses or messengers to their own people, and that the religiosity was so pervasive amongst Jews, Judaism so pervasive among Jews, and also Christianity to a large extent, even Islam, became so ubiquitous with Jews that they stopped being functional for Yahweh. And that as a result of that, that Yahweh had to go to a goy outside of the descendants of Abraham, Jacob, Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, to convey his message to his people, to awaken his people, to call them home, to reintroduce them to his name, which they had forgotten, to reintroduce them to their Messiah and to the Son of God, whom they have ignored, to explain to them the purpose of the Moed Mikre, so that they might understand the conditions and the benefits of the Bereth Covenant, and so that they might have their timeline corrected from the gross misrepresentation that is currently presented as part of Judaism. That was a lot to accomplish, and the problem that Yahweh faced and the reason that Yeshayah makes introducing Yahweh's solution to this problem, the central theme of his prophetic portrayal, is that God's not insane. And one would have to be insane to expect that after 3,000 years of irascible behavior, of ignoring his name, of ignoring his son's contribution, of misrepresenting both the covenant and the invitations to meet, by plastering over the Torah to reestablishing their own timeline and festivals, that it would have been insane for Yahweh to assume that after 3,000 years of behavior that was in opposition to everything he stood for and was offering, the Jews were going to turn around. that they were going to change, that they all of a sudden would say, oh my goodness, we need to accept Yahweh's name. We need to accept Dod as our Messiah, recognize that he is the Son of God. We need to embrace the realization that Dod, our Messiah and King, fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim. We need to understand, and we now do what that appreciate, what that represents, and how that makes us immortal, perfects us, and brings us back into the covenant family with Yahweh. We understand what Shavuah represents and what it's going to, when it's going to occur, what Teruah represents when it's going to occur, what the red heifer represents and when he will be sacrificed and for what reason. We're going to change our understanding now of Kippurim. It's not a day of affliction, but a day of reconciliation. We know when it's going to happen. We know who is returning. And we're fully accepting of the realization that on Sukkah, God is returning us to the conditions experienced in Eden, where there'll be no religion and no politics, nor anyone who is religious or political.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world was that going to happen when there wasn't anyone listening to Yahweh among Israelites? God recognized it wasn't going to happen. The next, this began 23 years ago. And that for the last 30 years of the 6,000 years since the expulsion from Eden, that the last 30 years were not going to be any different than the 5,970 years preceding it, unless he made them so.
Mm-hmm.
And Yahshayah exists to make them so. Yahshayah exists to present the problem of Jews preferring to be religious as opposed to engaging in the covenant relationship, and why God despises everything pursuant to Judaism, and how that has estranged he and his people, and so that as a result, he has deployed a fresh start, a sucker off the old fallen root stump, a new stem branching off of the tree of lives and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That is God's plan. And it is presented throughout the book of Yahshayah. The prophet Yahshayah wrote so that we might know what was ailing God's people, and how Yahweh intended to resolve that problem in the three decades prior to his return with his son, Dod. And so it is an expose on how to operate as the choter, the stem and sucker, a role fulfilled by the Nakar, observant foreigner, who will serve as the third and final Zeruah, the one cultivating the harvest, whose name Yada means to know, and how he will also serve as the Bashar herald, Dod, so that Israelites and Goyim as well would know the contributions toward our salvation by the Son of God and Messiah, King Dod. So that is an introduction to where we are. We are just finished our review of the 59th chapter. Here's a summary of the 61st. The Ruach spirit of Yahweh is upon me. For this reason, Yahweh has anointed, designated, and he has appointed that which is associated with me for the purpose of bringing this proclamation regarding the Bashar herald to the unpretentious and sincere who are ready to respond. The prophet Yahshayah, equating the Ruach, the spirit, which is the feminine manifestation of Yahweh's presence, of Yahweh, God's one and only name, pronounced based upon his Torah instructions. He is saying that by the Spirit being upon him, that he was anointed and designated and appointed for this particular mission. Just as Dod was anointed by the Spirit of Yahweh coming upon him at 8 years old. And we're told the Spirit never left him. And while Mashach is the verb underlying the title Mashiach, Messiah, it speaks of being anointed, being appointed, being designated. And so it's the Ruach, Spirit of Yahweh, that has come upon Yashayah for the reason of anointing and appointing that which is associated with me for the purpose of bringing this proclamation regarding the Bashar Herald to the unpretentious and severe and sincere who are ready to respond, Anah. That is his mission. He has already explained in the 11th chapter, now 50 chapters prior to this, that this choter, this new stem, this new growth, the sucker from the existing rootstock and the fallen stump of Yisrael, would have the seven spirits of Yahweh placed upon him. And the reason for that is, if you consider that you've got 8 billion people on this planet and not a single person listening to Yahweh, and the vast preponderance of them are either overtly religious and misguided by it, or they're overtly religious and even further misguided. And his own people, some 60% of them, are either lost in progressive politics or Judaism. And there's no one taking his testimony seriously and no one telling the world that God despises religion and politics and that you must walk away from those things. And then once you have done so, here's this glorious offer that God is making to us. And specifically, what it represents and how it was manifest and made possible in our lives. This prophet, Yashayah, exists to introduce us to this reality. And the reason, of course, for the seven spirits is there's only 30 years left when I began. God obviously didn't have much to work with and, you know, had to advance the implement. It's like taking an old computer and putting in a very fast processor and lots of RAM and a really big hard drive. And now what we have is multi-core machines. So this is a seven-core processor. This is what Yahweh has established to bring you this message. He has sent me at this time to encourage and gird those whose desires have been shattered and whose thinking has been thwarted such that their judgment has suffered, to provide an invitation which can be read aloud, to be liberated without constraint, to those who are being led away and controlled, and to those who are obligated and bound, and who have sworn an oath of allegiance and have joined in by providing a means of release, offering an opening to extricate themselves from being controlled. Completion of Yashayah 61:1. I'm often accused of using words as if they were jewels, and to read these books, you need a dictionary or a thesaurus at your side. But I'll tell you what, I don't hold a candle to Yashayah and the message that he conveys and the way that he wields words. Now, we've already been through the portion of Yeshaya where the prophet makes it very clear that throughout his life, no one listened to him. That when he went to heaven and Yahweh opened the door, there was no one there. And he has been emphatic in saying that both he and Yahweh, particularly Yahweh, looked and found no one with whom to speak, through whom to convey this message. So Yeshaya as a prophet is not talking about Jews circa 750 BCE.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not talking about Jews circa 33 CE when your 4,000 Yah don't return to fulfill the Moed Mikre. He is not talking about them until now, when his message is resonating again. Yeshaya has figured out that since he wrote the textbook for proper chodering, and since he explained the environment that the choder would operate in and exposed this choder, this bashar, this nakar, to Yisrael and to Goyim as they read this message, that he was conveying the message that would finally resonate with Yisrael and with Goyim and bring people into the covenant family. So this message that we are conveying is his message. And his message, as he was inspired by the Ruach of Yahweh, was Yahweh's message. So we are conveying Yahweh's message as it was inspired by the Ruach Kodesh of Yahweh through the prophet Yeshaya. Now, towards the world at this particular time. And according to the prophet, who knows because he has witnessed his future and our present, Yahweh has sent this message from Yeshaya at this time to encourage and gird those whose thinking has been thwarted, whose judgment has suffered, which would describe both religious and political Jews today and those caught in the middle in the tug of war between them. And our purpose is to provide an invitation which can be read aloud. And as you know, we not only have the 35 books on the shelf at yadayah.com, all offered free online and royalty free through in paperback form, but we're also producing these audio blogs to draw your attention to them because what we have shared can be read and recited aloud. And the purpose is to liberate without any constraints those who are controlled by political and religious agendas, those who are obligated and bound, those who have joined in. But our message is that of liberation. God does not want obedient slaves. He wants liberated thinkers who are free from the constraints that the religious and political post on them. The next verb is particularly important, as is the one which follows it. Zerah, which speaks of seeds. There are seeds which are sown resulting in offspring. It speaks of cultivating a productive harvest. It is the verb that lies at the heart of Zeroah, which is the one who is cultivating the current harvest. It says the seeds you have sown and your resulting offspring will be known, Yada, and recognized among the Gentiles, in addition to what you have produced with your descendants within the family. Our message initially resonated with Jews and Gentiles alike. And even as we have focused on God's people so that there is a successful homecoming and family reunion, which is essential for God's return and for the well-being of our planet, of the covenant family, of really everything, according to God. All along, we have been fairly equal in the Goyim and Yehudim, who have responded to Yahweh's name, Bereth Covenant, his Mikre, invitations to meet, who have read these books, and who have prospered in their relationship with Yahweh as a result of them. And that's what this says, that even as we focus on Yisrael, it is both Goyim and Yisraelites, Yehudim, who will benefit. The seeds that we have sown are producing offspring. Yada is known and recognized among the Gentiles, and that's going to increase exponentially as we move through the next 9 years. And Zerah, while it is the Hebrew word for seed, speaks for cultivating a harvest of saved souls. And God says that we've also produced additional descendants within the family. When God uses Am, it is usually Am Yisrael, the family of Israel. Everyone who witnesses them will recognize and acknowledge the Nakar, the observant foreigner, along with them, because they are the offspring of the seed sown, which Yahweh has blessed and lovingly raised, now beneficially extolled. Yeshaya 61:9. God designated a series of some 20 titles to describe the mission that we have embarked on. Yada is one of them. Bashar is another of them. Nakar, yet another observant foreigner. And it is also Yahweh's intent that we understand that the role of the observant foreigner, the Bashar, is to produce offspring, cultivating the harvest of saved souls. And that Yahweh has raised up and extolled this individual because he wants his people to listen to him and benefit from him. So this is a cohesive story. It has been unfolding literally before our eyes over these last 20-some years. And we see it vividly, chapter upon chapter, throughout Yeshaya, Isaiah. God and his prophet have led us to this place for a reason. He wants to garner his people's attention. He wants them to listen to him and return home. This next statement is the only one which appears to be in Yahweh's voice rather than Yeshaya's in this portion of the prophet's presentation, because almost everything that is revealed through Yeshaya is actually in Yahweh's voice speaking through his prophet.
Mm-hmm.
It seems as if God is inserting himself into this discussion at this point, because he wants to affirm that his attitude is identical to Yeshaya's, that he is also disappointed with his people's propensity to be political and religious. And he wants to show his empathy for his prophet's plight of having to go 2,700 years without anyone benefiting from or listening to what he had to share. And it should not have happened this way. Yahweh had given his people every advantage, establishing his covenant with them. He liberated them from slavery. He revealed his Torah through them. He invited them to his feast. And he did all of this in their language, in their presence. And in spite of this, he would have to deploy a goy to get their attention. Because they had told the very God of creation to shut up and go away. I was going to say that takes some real chutzpah to have been liberated from what would have been certain genocide in the control of Thutmose's Egypt, where he did not like the Hebrew slaves. And they had already started a process of killing the young boys right after they were born. They would soon be eradicated. And they were being worked to death. They had no freedoms. They had no identity. They had no opportunity. They had nothing. God intervened to liberate them from this, and then he gave them the greatest gift in the universe, his Torah, which points the way to eternal life and being perfected and being adopted into Yahweh's family, where you become a very, very child of God and inherit all that he has to give, enriched and empowered, enlightened and emancipated. And yet in his presence, under these circumstances, they told him to go away and to shut up. And they didn't get any better after that. And that's why I'm here. When God reached out to me, I did not tell him to go away and shut up. And that was really all that God needed to make a difference in everyone's life. So having rejected the people, I have exerted my dominance over the nation. In my displeasure and resentment, I have made them drink their fill of my righteous indignation. But then I will bring forth upon the earth their preeminence and opportunity to endure forevermore. Yeshaya 63:6. So God is making it really clear here that he allowed his people to suffer under hostile regimes rather than protect them, because they were so irascible. They were so belligerent, so desirous of worshiping false gods and being religious. But that it's not going to continue that way. In the end, Yahweh will act and return his people to preeminence so that they have the opportunity to endure forever. We are witnessing this renewal. We are part of this renewal. And we are offering an open invitation for you to join us in this eternal restoration of the relationship. In spite of the religious sentiments otherwise, when it comes to deadly dogmas, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, progressive politics, we ought not be accepting nor forgiving. To be loving, we must know when, what, why, and how to hate. Juxtaposition between God's overt animosity towards the religious while demonstrating his enduring affection for those within the relationship helps to demonstrate this point. To protect his family from the politics and religiosity that has hunted them down and subjugated and persecuted them for these last 2,700 years, God must despise that which has made their presence possible among his people, which today would be rabbis and politicians, just as he despises those who are motivated by their religion and politics to attack his people. After affording Yehudim with every advantage, Yahweh poured their birthright and their sovereignty out upon the earth. He would not allow their prior position to aid and abet their religion. For the better part of 3,000 years, Israelites have squandered the opportunity Yahweh has given them, which is why the Jewish religion forgoes the mention or the means to eternal salvation. After hearing Yahweh say this, Yeshayah, realizing that the God he loved had been given no alternative, he wanted his people to know what they had rejected to advance their lifeless and debilitating parasitic religion. I will recall and recount the loyal love, the unfailing kindness, and the enduring affection of Yahweh, the praiseworthy character, renown, and reputation of Yahweh, in accordance with all which for the benefit of the relationship Yahweh has done for our enrichment, as well as the abundant blessings for the house and family of Yisrael, which show the way to get the greatest joy out of life that he has accomplished, so that they might grow in accordance with his compassion and mercy, and in harmony with his steadfast love and devotion. Yeshayah, Isaiah 63:7. Now, Yisrael, that's a lot to give up, especially when you're giving it up for a parasitic and debilitating religion and a liberal socialist political mantra that will rob you of your land, of your identity, and of your life. Is there any wonder Yahweh is so disappointed in the horrid decisions which have led his people away from him when he is offering such a magnificent reward? You know, the God of the universe, the creator of life, is saying, I am offering you affection, a loving relationship. I am here to enrich you abundantly. My intent is to bless you. I want to show you the way to get the greatest joy out of life. I want you to grow. I want to shower you with favor, passion, as an expression of my steadfast love and devotion. And you told God under that circumstance to go away and shut up.
Whoa.
And you still haven't returned. What's it going to take? That's asking a lot of an old guy in a video blog. My 35 books don't do you any good unless you read them. What in the hell is wrong with you? And even though you've been so disgusting, so repulsive to Yahweh over these 3,000 years, still wants to offer you favors and blessings and enrichment and love. Why wouldn't you accept? What do you have to gain to continue along the same path that has brought such misery and death to Jews these 3,000 years? Why will you continue to be religious and political when you could have this instead? Yahweh is everything. Rabbis are not. A relationship with God does everything. And religion does nothing. Stifling. It's depressing. In the flow of events, the third Zoroah has teamed with Yahweh to awaken God's people and to condemn their enemies. As a result, Yahweh is able to transition from accusing to accepting, from despising to loving. Properly guided and equipped, a solitary life can make an extraordinary difference. For he said, now it will be true, my people will no longer be children who deceive and mislead. And so he will become for them an approaching Savior. Yeshaya 63:8. Even the last time that I went through this, I had a very tough time of processing this. I think I've shared, Kirk, so many, many times that it was such a thrill to be a translator and commentator on the word of Yahweh and perceive insights that were profoundly important that hadn't been shared or understood or even considered in thousands of years. And, you know, we were making such a contribution to the body of knowledge of Yahweh and the covenant relationship he was seeking with us and the mikre that allow us to grow with him.
Yes, sir.
And then one day, well, pursuing an understanding of what it means to be a choder, why the 11th chapter of Yeshaya was written. Who was this Zoroah fellow? That we came to realize that this isn't an anonymous mission.
No.
Not by hundreds and hundreds of times over. It isn't anonymous because, as it turns out, it's one of the most discussed themes throughout the prophets.
Isn't that amazing?
Truly amazing. And so that it's not anonymous at all. And then most recently is the realization in reading Yeshaya, of course, again, in the 17th chapter, that this fellow Yada, this Bashar, herald of his son, our king, this Nakar, observant foreigner, the Zoroah, the one cultivating these final harvests, is more than just a witness. He will lay down his life for you, Yisrael, sacrificing it so that you might live. And someone who offers his life to prepare others such that they come clean and can enjoy Yahweh's arrival with his son on Yom Kippurim, from God's perspective, becomes a savior.
Sure.
He is literally saving this mortal remnant of Yisrael so that they can experience the family reunion and homecoming on Yom Kippurim. Moreover, his role as the Zoroah, leading the willing to the harvest of standing grain at the commencement of the time of Jacob's trouble, is, of course, saving them, as is cultivating the teruah gleaning. But it's mostly as the red heifer, which is a role that Yeshaya introduced us to in the 17th chapter. And so, Israel, it might be a bitter pill for you to swallow, that you've gone so far away from Yahweh over these last three millennia, that it's now an observant foreigner who is laying down his life so that you might live. And that's what this says. So this is the intent, and it is the result of the Adama Parah, the red heifer. It is why the story is detailed in the Torah. It's why it's affirmed in Yeshaya. And let's not lose sight of the fact that when you read the story of the adulterous woman in the book of Numbers in the wilderness, Bamidbar, the 3,500 years since it was scribed by Moshe, I don't think there's a single rabbi or theologian who's ever explained to you what that story actually represents.
I can't find
until now. And we're going to go through it as we move through this chapter, this volume of Yad Yahweh. But the adulterous woman isn't a woman. And she did not cheat on her individual husband. What the story is about. The story is about Israel. And you've cheated on your Messiah. You cheated on the very Son of God. You cheated on your King. And he's decided he wants you back.
Wow.
And so the whole purpose of the red heifer is to clean you up and prepare you to be embraced again by your King, your Messiah, and your real Savior, Dod. And that's the reason why the story of the red heifer and the story of the adulterous woman are not only told in the same book, but the remedy that they present is identical. It is also why we go from the story of the red heifer in Numbers 19 to the very next words on the most despicable acts in the history of Israel. We know that it is the waters that Yahweh releases under the Temple Mount that come up underneath the blazing sacrifice with flames rising to the heavens, the smoke billowing in the air, cleansing waters tumbling off the Temple Mount to cleanse and prepare Israel for the homecoming and the family reunion just 10 days away from Teruah, when this will transpire, with Eliyah himself being the master of ceremony, reenacting what he did two millennia, 888 years prior, in front of the political and religious establishment, also with a bull. And when we read that, in advance of the waters of Meribah, the contrast is, this is the solution. The waters of the Meribah are the problem with the most despicable time in the history of Israel, pursuant to God. Didn't get any worse than that. But you haven't left it. And so this is the solution. After all this time, when Yahweh tried to clean you up and prepare you for his brilliant light and his booming voice 3,500 years ago at the base of Mount Horeb, he's giving you another chance. Going to clean you up, wash your apparel such that you're ready for your second chance to see his brilliant light and to hear his glorious voice, to trade the waters of Meribah for the cleansing waters that emerge under the sacrifice of the red heifer. The story is what Yeshaya has introduced and is now affirming. Throughout all of their afflictions and anguish, the messenger announcing his presence and appearance, liberating and saving them, will not be restricted. With his love and due to his compassion and mercy, he will redeem them. Then he will lift them up and carry them away based upon everything which has previously transpired and will occur throughout eternity. Yeshaya 63:9. There are places here where the line between what Yeshaya is saying in these words,
mm-hmm.
what Yada is doing by reintroducing his people to Yahweh and to the path home that God has provided, and Yahweh's orchestration of these events in the last day, it's all blurred together, all integrated, such that we realize that the message of the observant foreigner, this message of conveyed by this Malach, who is announcing the presence and the appearance of Yahweh, and is preparing his people for his arrival, that his sacrifice as the red heifer is nothing but a gruesome scene without what God does with it.
Yeah.
It's the waters that Yahweh releases under that funeral pyre that make the difference. It's the way the ashes are mixed with that water and how the blood not only anoints the approach to the house for Yahweh's name and the covenant home, also the mercy seat of the covenant, where the relationship is resolved and rectified. It's God that is doing this. The flames that are ignited by the Almighty, just as they were 2,888 years ago with Elia. Mm-hmm. And God's got his right hand orchestrating all of this, making it work for his people so that his homecoming and family reunion are a wonderful celebration. And through his love and the way that this will all transpire as expression of his great compassion, he's going to redeem them. He's going to lift them up. He's going to carry them away based upon everything that has previously transpired and will occur throughout eternity. When they became recalcitrant and rebellious, they digressed, and they grieved his set-apart spirit. Therefore, he was transformed into their enemy, and he himself opposed them. God wants his people to know that they made an enemy out of their God and Savior. And he wants them to know that in spite of what they have done to him, that he is not going to be vindictive, that he is instead going to orchestrate the events that lead to their salvation, to a restoration of the relationship. And he says, then he remembered the days of old where Moshe and his people were brought up and out of the sea through the shepherding of his flock. It is where he placed his set-apart spirit in their midst. So Yahweh was remembering the best of times. That is one of the beauties of his plan, is that when Dode carried the guilt of every covenant member away from us and deposited it in Sheol on Matzah, Yahweh is able to see the best in us. And he will forget the worst in us. And that is not just true of Israel collectively or Goyim collectively, but us individually.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk, we're really very bold about how we convey Yahweh's message to his people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet we realize that we're only here and emboldened in this because Yahweh sees us the very way that he sees his people when he first led them through the sea to their
mm-hmm.
liberty and swallowed the enemy pursuing them. He sees them for the best that they
mm-hmm.
have ever been and can be.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees the same in us. The reason that we can do this, recognizing how great God is and how insignificant we are, how brilliant he is, and by comparison, how slow we are, how articulate he is, and the fact that we have our issues in communication.
Mm-hmm.
But from Yahweh's point of view, our very willingness to do what the Israelites were doing at that moment, to go where his words lead, to follow
mm-hmm.
him, to trust him,
yes,
to celebrate this new relationship with him, that's enough. That's enough. And that's the conclusion of our program this evening. We've taken it past the time that we said we would. We're going to try to be more judicious so we don't overwhelm our audiences with programs that are just way too long. You'll have to understand we're very passionate about the Word of God. We can talk about the Word of God around the clock 24/7 and never grow weary of it and maintain this level of enthusiasm because it's genuine. And it's one of the reasons we want to go into the video presentation of this program so that you can see it for yourself, so that you won't just have one long-form show a week to listen to, but instead two or three a day.
Wow.
All of which are presented in real time with the camera capturing the genuineness of the moment, the expressions.
Wow.
And that is what Yahweh has asked us to do. It is what we will do to the best of our ability. Of course, we recognize that most of the people who exist in the blogosphere are 20-somethings that are recording in their mom's basement. And that I'm not quite as old as Moshe when he began, but I'm not that far off either. And they say it's tough to teach an old dog new tricks. But we know how this turns out. We know that Yahweh is pleased with the result. So somehow he is going
there.
To manage to get his people's attention by this approach. And we're going to do the best we can, which is going to be good enough. And as we move forward, we will need lots of help. We would encourage you to join us and help work alongside Yahweh, our Father. You'll love every moment of it just as we do.
You will.
Yep. Yeah, we certainly will, Kirk. And pretty soon, Kirk is going to be in the blogosphere as well. We're going to see his handsome face. Probably not in mom's basement, however, because he's a real grown-up now, living in the People's Republic of California. Under the storm watch of the Carmelians, in what is really one of the most beautiful places on earth, 3 days a year when the sun shines. I'm giving my friend Kirk some flack because we did our best to encourage him to move here and right into the same community that we live in the Virgin Islands, where, of course, a really, really, really hot day is about 88 degrees, and a really, really cold day, sometimes it slips down all the way to like 78. And we live in this bubble between these temperatures with really pleasant humidity and lovely tropical trade winds. But nonetheless, Yorla, endure these storms. It's been a pleasure to be with you this evening. We thank you for listening. We will be with you this time next week. And soon thereafter, we'll be switching to another blog broadcast platform. I began this program by listing several of them, I think four or five of them that are in the offing. There is Buzzsprout, which normally I would just laugh at the name, but of course Iowa is very fond of bees. It's not only the land of milk and honey, but the word for bee, Dabar, is based upon Dabar word, and yeah. Sprout is consistent with the role of the choder as a stem and sprout off the main branch, which is Dode. So the name kind of fits, and it is a very popular site. Sprecher is another one. It's affiliated with iHeartRadio. But there are a number of them. I shared the various names at the beginning of this program, but you could also just Google what are the top 10 or 15 sites for this sort of thing. And I would encourage those of you who have been longtime listeners and members of the Covenant family to go to them and review them, compare them, and decide which one you want this program broadcast on. As for the video blogs, they're going to be disseminated through and cultivated in Riverside, which is the most dominant and most professional of the video blog sites. And so that will be our intent as we move forward in that direction. So now you know our future. We encourage you to be part of it, and we thank you for listening. Have a wonderful Shabbat. And Kirk, I understand it's going to be very, very stormy tonight, so keep your head down. And keep the windows locked and shut, and we wish you the best.
Okay.
Shabbat. Yeah, good night.
Good night.
The future of healthcare is here. Are you ready for it? Listen to the Elevate Care podcast powered by AMN Healthcare to hear how leaders are revolutionizing the industry. Imagine technology improving patient care, generative AI transforming the workflow, and breakthrough innovations improving lives. The Elevate Care podcast leads with empathy and innovation, offering strategies to explore a future where technology and compassion create a healthier world. Listen now to AMN Healthcare's Elevate Care podcast.
How powerful is Cox Internet?
Powerful enough to stream all my live sports actually live?
Yep.
Powerful enough to share my screen more smoothly?
You got it.
Powerful enough to keep my games online and my squad on top?
Oh yeah.
That's pretty powerful.
Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox, the nation's fastest internet provider. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial cable. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply. Fastest based on average download speeds from highspeedinternet.com. Speed test in 2023.